charity event. Okay, so I'm going to try to show you what I'm calling a closer look at the underline event in Run 2. And the underline event is not a well-defined thing, as you know. It's all this garbage that takes place underneath the hard scattering that you're looking at. And unavoidably, it gets contributions from initial and final state radiation, from the beam-beam remnants, and maybe from multiple parton interactions. And you can't tell at a given moment when you see a particle where it came from. The whole idea is to isolate various regions that make you sensitive to the various components. And a lot of what I'm going to show you today is just a little bit of what the wish list that we all made up together, many of you and me and Michelangelo, when we were at the CERN workshop. And I've worked very hard to try to get some of it done so I could show you here. What's going to happen is after you see what I have to show you, the wish list is just going to get modified because as I've been preparing the talk, I realized that all I've done is created a whole bunch more wish lists because there's more you're going to want to see. So I have a lot of new stuff they haven't seen. I'm going to define two classes of events and try to look at the underlying event in those two classes of events. I'll explain to you why in a minute. I've also done what you suggested. I've broken up the transverse region into max and min. We can look at that. I've also looked at PT max and PT max in the transverse region, which I'll tell you a little bit about why I'm doing that. I'm looking at delta phi distributions, densities, and something called associated densities, which I think I just made up the word associated density, but it's a measure of clumpiness, and I'll show you what it measures and why I think it's interesting. I've produced what I actually showed you illegally at CERN, was the average PT versus charge multiplicity, and I may show you something illegally today too, which will be in the next wish list. But anyway, I've got that now available, and then I've also it's led to looking at correlations between the two transverse regions, and I'll show you just a little bit of that as well. As I said, watch the page numbers go by, and you'll see that many pages are being skipped. I'm trying to just show you the key features and a little bit of everything. And someday, all the plots will be on the CDF Blessed Plot website, and you can access them. Illegally means not blessed. And I'm not allowed to show you any. And if you say I did, I'll say you're lying.
They'll be available as soon as we buy a new disk.
Yeah, I know. But they all have Unix machines that doesn't run real one on their machine, so they can't look at the streaming video anyway. So anyway, okay. So you all know the idea from the Run 1 analysis. We're going to use the leading jet in the event basically to define a direction in A to phi space. I'm going to allow that leading jet to go in this region here. It can go from -1 to 1, and then I'm defined various regions around in phi. And there's two transverse regions. Sometimes I combine them, sometimes I look at them each separately. Each of these little squares is 60 degrees, so this would be 60, 120, 60, 120 here, and 60 going around. And the idea here is that the transverse region, if you have a 2-to-2 hard scattering, the transverse region is perpendicular to the plane of that scattering and is sensitive to, although as you will see, it receives contributions from the wayside jet, but it's sensitive, more sensitive to the beam-beam remnants, the underlying event.
So we're only looking at events with a high PT jet?
Yes. No, well, not when I look at min bias, but I'll tell you when you're not. I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, since you're not as familiar with densities, let me just familiarize with density. The reason for looking at densities, what I'm going to plot for you is the number of charged particles per unit A to phi, or the scalar PT sum of charged particles per unit A to phi. I'm looking at charged particles that have PT greater than a half, and they're in this region that occupies 4 pi in A to phi space. And the reason for that is that the CDF, COT, is very efficient for PTs greater than a half. And this is a region where it's got uniform efficiency, and it's a very clean region. And so that's things that you can get blessed quicker than some of the more difficult things, like looking at energy flow. So this is just looking at charged particles. But yet I'm still using that leading jet to define the direction. But other than that, I use that and then look at the charged particles. Now, but to get a feel for this, if there was on the average one charged particle in this region, then the density would be 0.08. Or if there was one PT sum, one GeV over C of PT sum, it would be 0.08 GeV over C per unit A to phi. If you had three of them on the average, it would be three times more. And the reason for showing you three of them, I'm going to compare whenever I can to just what a typical Min-Bias collision looks like without requiring any jets or anything, just to get an idea of how the densities in various regions around jets looks like the density in a typical soft Min-Bias collision. And this number three is not bad, because for this region, you get about three particles and about three GeV over C. So you get densities that are about what I've showed here and average over that region. Now, I'm also going to look at densities in the transverse region. And there, you have to pay attention to whether I'm looking just at one region. So for example, one charged particle in that region would have a density of 0.48. Sometimes I look at the separate regions, but sometimes I look at the average of the two regions without making a distinction. So if you had just one particle here, no particle there, then the average density in the transverse region would have been half of this. Okay, show you a phi distribution. What I'm doing here is I'm going to take the leading jet direction and put it here exactly on an event-by-event basis, rotate it to be there, and then plot the density, number of particles per unit A to phi, going around this way, around here, coming around, going on the other side and coming back. And the thing that I was calling the transverse region, there it goes. The transverse region, the two transverse regions are shaded here. And you see the transverse regions are more sensitive to the underlying event. This is the average density of charged particles in a Min-Bias collision, which is azimuthally symmetric. And I just plot it here to show you that even in the transverse region, there's more activity than a typical Min-Bias collision, which we learned from run one as well. You can just see it very clearly here. You also see something, also, besides reminding you that that's a log plot, that's the Min-Bias. You also see this. You see that since I've only used the leading jet and made no other restrictions about any of the other jets, there is a feed into this region of three jets and things swinging around. You can see it kind of here. And that makes the transverse region have some hard scattering component in it, which is fine. It's interesting to see how well the Monte Carlo models will model that. But if you're trying to isolate beam-beam remnants and multiple parton scattering, it might be nice to have another set of events to look at. So here's what you just saw. And I'm going to just make up some words. I'm going to call these events where I use nothing but the only restriction is that it has a leading jet. And in fact, the leading jet is in this region here of ET for this plot. But if I make no other restriction than that, I'm going to call that a leading jet event. Now, there's a subclass of events. It's a subset of the leading jet events, which I'm going to call back-to-back events. And those are events where I demand that they had two jets and that the second jet was nearly back-to-back in phi in that light blue region, and it had roughly the same ET, within 80% of the same ET. And I'm going to call that class of events back-to-back events. And now you can see that the delta phi distribution of the one I showed you before, and you can see the back-to-back events with your eyeball, you can see they have less feeding in of the hard scattering component. That doesn't mean they don't have a hard scattering component, but it gives you a different mixture of components, and having two things with different mixtures gives you somewhat of more of a handle on what's going on.
What fraction of the leading jet events are back-to-back events?
It depends on the ET range you're looking at, but roughly 30 to 40%.
And
one related question. If you have a HiPTW, which just from its HiPT would tell you that there's jet activity on the other side, mm-hmm. what fraction of those would be considered leading jet events?
Okay, well, first of all, I don't have any W's in here because I'm just looking at the jets. What you're suggesting is another analysis, which I've actually also done, and that is you just use the direction, you do it with Z, it's better than W, and you take the Z and use it as a direction to define the direction, and you look at phi around that, and then you think that in the direction of the Z would look more like the transverse region as well. You know, I mean, that's what you're suggesting, and that we've done that, but that's a different analysis.
No, but I'm just curious. There's a jet criteria. Not every jet looks like something that would meet that criteria. So this is a way
this to is,
so I was just curious how what hit you're taking to have a well-defined jet.
These are not necessarily well-defined jets, and these are just, this is just, I take the event, there's a jet algorithm, forms jets, and that's just the leading jet without having any restriction whatsoever about, you know, what it looks like or anything. It's just the deficit. So I'm not quite sure what you mean. You'll have...
But with a cone size of 0.7, you're not collecting this much.
Yeah, you don't. And so I don't, yeah, so I'm not sure what you mean, but you'll have to explain it to me in more detail later. And I'll think about it. I probably can answer it once I can figure out what you're asking.
The 30 to 40% of the leading jet events that are back-to-back events.
Mm-hmm.
What are the rest of them?
They don't have it. The rest of them have a jet, or maybe that isn't this jet. They might be one jet here and two jets where the second jet didn't carry 80% of the energy of the first jet. Or you realize I'm only looking at a certain, these jets are only in the region minus 2 to 2 in eta, so you can miss a jet. You don't have a jet in that outside that region.
Okay. The jets are minus 2 to 1, but the charge tracks are in minus 1 to 1.
Yes, the jets are from minus 2 to 2, but the charge tracks are always in the central region.
Why is it going back to that previous spot when you look at the subset of events that are back-to-back,
yes,
it seems that there's a decrease in the charge track multiplicity opposite, even though you demanded that there was a...
Where?
Doesn't the black go down for the opposite jet? The black means that...
Here? Oh, but that's because, you see, this jet has to be in this light blue region, where
yes.
The other jet... The jet that was in here, I made no restriction on the jets. It's swinging around in a bigger region. That's all.
You're forcing it to be collimated.
I'm forcing this. This one forces this to be more collimated because you're demanding that it be in that spot. Whereas the leading jet events make no demand on it at all.
It seems like more the energy is, you're demanding that more of the energy is concentrated opposite.
I did demand that, and
so
more of the energy
why,
is.
Why the charge track multiplicity goes down?
Where?
It goes up.
It goes up.
The red of the back-to-back. Never mind. That's right there.
See the red arrow?
Everything you've done is correct.
The red arrow goes...
Is that true? Is that true?
I'll quote you on that after you see some more things. This is another way to look at it that I thought was fun. But this, the other was on a log plot. This is a linear plot. But this is a polar plot. And... the leading jet events are in red, and you have to, I mean, in a linear plot like this, the jet direction has goes off scale there, but you can see that if you look here, that's the transverse region is in green. It's just another way to look at the same thing, and you see the same effect, less swinging around in that region. Okay, so now let's look at the average PT sum density in the transverse region as a function of the ET of the leading jet. And the leading jet also defines the transverse region. And we'll look at it for the back-to-back events and for the leading jet events. And you can see there is a rise here. You see as the scattering becomes a bigger Q-squared, you get more and more radiation, which is feeding into here. We'll talk about it later. The back-to-back events, you don't see much energy dependence at all. Here's the min bias level. So the transverse region, even for the back-to-back events, is higher than a typical min bias, but you don't see that rise that you do in the leading jet events. Here is the beginning of some comparisons between Pythia Tunae and Heerwig. Pythia Tunae has multiple parton scattering in it that was tuned by me to fit the run one data. Heerwig has no multiple parton scattering. It doesn't necessarily mean that differences are due to multiple parton scattering, because there's lots more ingredients in a model, in a Monte Carlo model, than just that. But nevertheless, it's interesting to compare a model with it, multiple parton scattering, and a model without. And in the run one analysis that CDF published, we only went out to about 60 here, and now we're going way out here, and you can see Heerwig does start agreeing at very large jet energies. It's down in here where the disagreement is, and we'll look at that in more details. The black curves are the Pythia, and the blue is the Heerwig. And I've got two. This is for the leading jet events, and these two are for the back-to-back events. And you see Pythia Tunae does fit this pretty well. It wasn't tuned to fit this. It was tuned to fit the run one data. It wasn't tuned to fit any of this, but it was tuned to fit the run one data. So, okay, let's look at the energy dependence a little bit, because it's going to play a role in it. So what you can see this rise here in the activity in the underlying event in the transverse region. And now I'll show you the phi distributions for the leading jet events for these two different energy regions. One of them corresponding to the gray shaded region here. So this is the average over this region. That's the blue. And then another one for this region, where you see it's increased. And now you see the increase, though, is you can tell it's coming, you know, from the hard scattering, so to speak, because it's feeding in from like two to three, like one, three jet processes feeding into that region. Now I'll show you the same thing for the back-to-back events. The back-to-back events show almost no energy dependence. You see there's very little difference between this average and this average, and you see very little difference in the energy dependence in the transverse region. It's almost the same.
But you would also see a smaller fraction of events are going to satisfy the back-to-back criteria, right? Because basically you're just restricting.
Yeah, yeah. So smaller sample does satisfy, as you move up in energy, a smaller sample does. But these are, yes, it doesn't matter how big your sample is. These are just averages in the transverse region.
Right, right.
But
just
still,
you're restricting radiation.
Yes, yes, you are. That's right. And so you might think there may be no radiation in this region because you've suppressed it, but that's not true, as you'll see in a minute. Okay, so now this is something you wanted to see, and I'll show you quickly because I want to move on to some other things. This is looking at the difference on an event-by-event basis, the difference between the density of PT sum in the maximum of the two transverse regions minus what it is in the minimum on an event-by-event basis. It's called transdiff. And it's interesting because it's actually very sensitive to the hard scattering component, because the beam-beam remnants and things ooze through each other, you know, populate both sides, whereas if you have one big hard initial state radiation, it'll go to one or the other. And then by subtracting the two, you'll get something that's more sensitive to the hard scattering. And you see a very big difference between the back-to-back events and the leading jet events, as somebody, Peter, you predicted I would at CERN. I think it was you, said, if you do this, you'll see that. And I did. I think you said that, but at least I'm crediting you. Here's the predictions again from Heerwig and Pythia Tunae, and it's not much different than the previous plot I showed you, as far as Tunae agrees and Heerwig is low at the low jet energies. Now here's the min density. The min density is supposed to be more sensitive to the beam-beam remnants, and there's not such a difference between the min density in the leading jet and the back-to-back events. They're not the same. And this is the density for a min-bias collision. So you can see how that compares.
Less in back-to-back,
yep. Because see, even the min density gets some hard scattering, and we're suppressing into the back-to-back events. But this shift, this is a different scale than the previous plot. This shift is much smaller than the difference in the previous plot. Okay, so there's the prediction again. Now, this is, I think, pretty significant, but I'll show you more things later that pertain to this same question, but looking at it from a different way. Pythia tunae actually decreases slightly through this region, and so does the data. And without multiple parton interactions, here it actually rises because it's building up the underlying event by hard radiation, which is rises with Q squared. So,
We've looked at a lot of plots like this. How are we supposed to understand the error bars? It obviously there's some correlation.
Yes.
The most of these
error bars are dominated by systematics, not by statistical errors. And it has to do with how well you think your detector is, how many tracks it's missing, and how many spurious tracks you're measuring it. And it's possible that if I was going to put this in a publication form, which my graduate student is working on, you can actually study this a little better and lower these systematic errors a little bit. But at the stage it's at right now, hedging my bet, it ends up looking kind of funny because it has pretty big systematic errors.
Should we understand that the ratios of points have the statistical error, which is given by the fluctuation of this?
Yeah.
So the effect all the way on the left.
This effect, is actually a real effect. Yes, it is a real effect. I sort of cannot understand the origin of that effect. I'm not really concentrating on that now because I'm really working on how it's behaving out here. I can explain to you where that effect comes from. It is there a little bit.
So what is the feature of 2A that makes it? Did you predict that this is what Pythia would look like before you looked at it?
2A came from those fits I did to the run one data. It had never been, and so I just plotted it on here. So it's doing all this by itself, except for the fact I fiddled it and fit it and fit the run one data.
But are you treating this as a black box? You're trying to understand what the physics is.
At this moment, I'm not retuning it. I'm trying to run with a Monte Carlo that has multiple parton scattering and one doesn't. And I'm basically trying to generate data that is going to teach us more about the underlying event. And at the same time, I'm putting the Monte Carlos on here for you. But let me continue along, and you'll see. I mean, I'll answer this question some more. The real key is to really understand whether the fact that this agrees and this doesn't is really because of multiple parton interactions. And of course, you can't answer that. I can't answer that yet, but maybe by the end of the talk or by the next round of wish lists, we'll get to that because we really would like.
You cannot switch on the multi-parton scattering from the PTR?
Oh, you can switch it off, but then it doesn't agree. I mean, it looks ridiculous if you switch it off. Okay, I mean the way it's built, designed is that the way it does its beam remnants and everything. If you don't put a little bit of multiple parton scattering in there, you get a ridiculous. The underlying event looks ridiculous if you turn it off.
So
you can't really do that.
Multiple parton scattering, you like having protons and all the transparent stuff.
So.
I mean, you can make an underlying event more dynamic.
Okay, let me show you, let me continue here. I guess I am never going to get through this in the time I thought I was going to be able to, as Joey keeps saying to me. I want to isolate on this region now where there's a difference between the two and show you what that difference looks like in more detail. Okay, so here we go. This is that region that I had just shaded between 30 and 70. You can't see this, but you'll see it in a minute. The red is the data, and the black dots are Pythia tunae. Now, here is the same thing. The red is the data, and the blue dots are Heerwig. And here is two plots that show the data minus the theory, which means in this case it's the density of the data minus the density of Pythia tunae, and over here it's the density of the data minus the density predicted by Heerwig. And so this is, it was low in the transverse region. It fits perfectly well, as good as as Pythia does in the jet, in the jets. It's just in the transverse region. It's off. And in fact, it's quite amusing. It looks, it's kind of just off everywhere by a shift. If you just add a uniform density, I'm just playing a game now. Just play a game, just to show the, if you just take and add a uniform density everywhere of 0.2 GeV over C, then they, Pythia and Heerwig look very similar. So that's just, that's the size of the discrepancy you're talking about. It's not huge. It corresponds to about, if it was averaged over the whole 4 pi region, it'd be 2.5 GeV over C. So
the larger error bars in the jet regions are just because of the...
The largest error bar, these are all systematic errors again, okay? And when you get into the regions of the jets, the systematic errors are much bigger. There is some funny things happening in here that I don't really want to talk about because it would require a much more careful study of particles that are densely packed inside jets. Transverse region here, though, is well in control, and the systematic errors are not very big. Now, you asked for this, so I'm going to show you this very quickly because I want to get on to the real thing I want to say, which I, always happens. I don't. You asked for this, so I'll show you quickly. This is the run-to min bias data, the average KT of the particles versus the number of charged particles in that 4 pi central region. Here is the same thing, the average KT of particles versus the multiplicity, just using the transverse region where you have leading jets between 30 and 70, and the brown is the same thing for back-to-back events. And I don't have time to go into the philosophy here, but this is also a measure of how what kind of mixture between hard and soft you have. And the steeper this rises, the more hard scattering you have in there. And I can't fit this with Heerwig because this requires being fit with, at least this curve, requires being fit with a min bias model. And here, this is Pythia 2A, serves as a min bias model as well. So there's the fits to Pythia 2A. And you guys were telling me at CERN it was going to be horrible, but it's not. It looks okay, not bad. Okay, now get on to what I really want to talk about. First, let me just introduce the idea of PT max, okay? PT max, in this case, you take the leading jet to define the transverse region, and then you look at the maximum PT particle in the transverse region. And first, let me just show you what the average PT max is for leading jet events and back-to-back events compared to the average PT max in a min-bias collision. Okay, now I will try to tell you what I mean by associated densities. And I'm going to start off by looking at associated densities in min-bias collisions, because I want to show you that associated densities is a nice way to, is a way to measure clumpiness. It might not be the best way, but it would be the first way you would start. So what you do is you take a min-bias collision, you look in that region of 4 pi, you take the maximum PT particle, you use it to define a direction, and then you plot just what I've been plotting before, the density of particles and the density of PT sum as a function of delta phi relative to the direction of this particle. But you call it an associated density because you don't use the particle that's defining the direction in the density. So it's the density that's associated, comes along with or associated with PT max, but PT max is not counted in this.
Oh, I lost track.
Yes.
So PT max is defined
Not here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll get to that. Here, PT, this is now min bias.
Okay.
There is no jet.
Okay. Good.
But we'll get to the jet later if I get talk long enough. But first here, because I want to show you what it looks like when there are no jets around. Are there correlations? You know, if you have a particle going off in one direction, are there going to be more particles around it?
That's right.
Or is it going to be azimuthally symmetric? Well, you know the answer. But I want to show you what that looks like because we can use it to compare. So here is this blue, and again, these are systematic errors because, I'm sorry, they're systematic errors. This is the direction of PT max, and this is the associated number of charged particles per unit A to phi. And you see there's a nice little correlation here. And here I'm making no restriction on what that PT max is. All it has to do is be greater than a half. No further restriction on how big it has to be. And you see a strong correlation because you see this green is just the average charge density of a Mann-Bias collision, including all the particles. This blue is the density of particles coming along with PT max, not counting PT max. And you see it's a huge correlation, and the way you judge how big the correlation is you compare it to the one where you didn't demand anything. And in fact, you see there's a higher probability, when you find a particle, there's a higher probability of finding another particle with it than there was in finding the particle to begin with. It's a strong correlation. Okay, so now I'm going to show you what I'm going to call the birth of jet number one and jet number two. Because now this is the black curve you just saw. They didn't make any restriction on how big PT max had to be. And this is requiring PT max to be greater than one JeV, and this is requiring PT max to be greater than two JeV. And so we're just going from greater than 0.5, greater than 1, greater than 2, and you see the correlation growing, and you see this is the birth of jet number 1, looked at from this point of view. Now, it also is kind of the birth of jet number 2 also, because you see jet number 2 has no restriction. It's swinging around, but it's causing this away side to rise up. So you're really seeing the birth of jet number 1 here, and this rising up in the away side, the birth of jet number 2. You're also seeing something that is interesting. If you look at the transverse region here, there's PT max. Now you look at the transverse region. If you remember those plots, in the transverse region, the density rose very rapidly at low ET and then sort of plateaued out. And it's this very rapid rise through here in the transverse region. And people used to think that the transverse region looked like Mann-Bias, but you can see here, in just going from 0.5 to 1 to 2, this is rising rapidly above the Mann-Bias level. And so not only do you see the birth of jet number 1, the birth of jet number 2, you see this rapid increase in density in the transverse region.
What's the typical value of PT max in the Mann-Bias
range? If you don't make any restriction on it, the average is 1 JeV.
This PT greater than 0.5, that's irrelevant for the highest.
I didn't make any restriction on it, so it could be as low as 0.5. But all particles that I'm looking at have to have greater than a half. And so if you don't make any restriction on it, then all you can say is it has to be greater than a half. Its average is about 1. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the other ones, I required that they had to be greater than 1 or greater than 2.
No, I'm asking a different question.
Yeah.
If you weren't instrumentally limited to PT greater than a half, but you could integrate all the way down.
Oh, yeah. I wish you could.
It would still be about 1.
No, it would be less. It would be less because you see, you're averaging into that zeros.
Yeah.
You see, sometimes you don't get any particles with greater than a half. And that zero gets added in here.
Yes.
And, okay. So, the question is, how much would PT max change if you included all particles? You're right, it wouldn't change that much. Okay, now, if you can now see how good you are in spatial geometry here. Watch. Now, I'm going to go away from Mann-Bias now and back to the leading jet and back-to-back. In fact, let's forget about the leading jet and just do it for the back-to-back. Because the back-to-back supposedly is where we suppressed all of the hard scattering, okay? So now let's just concentrate on back-to-back. So here's my back-to-back events. This jet is defining the transverse regions. This jet has to be back-to-back and carry 80% of the ET of the leading jet. Once you have the two transverse regions defined, you find the maximum PT particle in the transverse region. You put it there on every event. And then you plot the phi around relative to that direction. And if you look at it, you'll see, and you rotate it to put it at the center of the plot. So when you look at this, realize that this PT max is always going to be there. The jet 1 region is now not going to be at a point. It's going to be spread out over here, and the jet 2 region will be spread out over that region. But nevertheless, let's see what it looks like. So here is what I'm going to call the birth of jet number 3. It looks pretty familiar. It's the same. This is the associated density, so it doesn't include PT max T. And you see there is particles coming along. Even though I've suppressed hard scattering in the transverse region, there's still a large correlation. So there's jet number one. That's this big bump here, but it's spread out now over this region. So it's spread out here because it's not a unique point at every event. Here's jet number two. Of course, it's spread out too because it's not at a unique point every event. Here's jet number three. This is the birth of jet number three. In the same way that you saw the birth of jet number one a minute ago in Min Bias, now you've seen the birth of jet number three in the transverse region of these two back-to-back events. And so there's a lot of clumpiness, even in these events where you've suppressed the hard scattering. And maybe, in the same way you were looking at the away side of the Min Bias and seeing that rise and thinking, oh yes, that's because you had a second jet, you might even have a fourth jet here causing the rise on the away side. Maybe. You can't tell from these distributions, but it looks similar. So let me do the same thing I did before to see how strong this correlation is. The way I did it before is I compared the associated density in the Min Bias with just an average Min Bias. So now I'm going to compare the associated density, which is in black, with the density from back-to-back events where you don't make any restriction, you don't make any restriction on what you see in the transverse region. And it's just like as before. There's a higher, in the transverse region, once you have one particle, it's a higher probability of having another one with it that's higher than of finding it to begin with, just like it was for the Min Bias. So it's a strong correlation, again, just like it was for the Min Bias. And I just said that same thing again. Okay, now, here's another way to look at this. I'll just point out several things to you. This is, again, comparing the associated density where you have PT max here every time with just the average density of back-to-back events. And you can see, again, it's the same plot, but done in a polar plot. And it's kind of interesting on the other side how that looks. This is pulled in this way here for this plot. I'll show you another one in a minute. It gets pushed back out again as you demand a higher PT. There's the leading jet events. And I'll show it to you this way. And then we're going to speculate a little bit about what's going on here and show you how well Herwig and Pythia agree with these distributions where you're having multiple jets in the process. Now you see, now I've required PT max to be T in the transverse region to be greater than 2 JeV. And you see now it's pushed out on this side as well. So there it is. And so let's speculate and see. So let's talk about jet topologies. Well, as soon as this goes here, there's jet number three. You know, this is all the stuff coming along with in the direction of that maximum PT particle. Here's a way a three-jet topology might satisfy this thing. You've got to have this jet and this jet be back-to-back carrying roughly the same ET. It's pretty hard. You can see this way this is pulled out here and pushed back here. And this is here. It kind of looks like, well, some three-jet topologies would be satisfying this constraint. But there could be four-jet topologies, too. Because this is also increasing out here, it's hard for the three-jet topology to do that. And so the question is, how do the Monte Carlos compare, and how much three- and four-jet topologies do you really have here? That would be an interesting. The reason it's interesting is there's two ways to get four jets, and outgoing four jets. You can have the ordinary two-to-two process, and then have initial and final state radiation produce the other jets. But in Pythia Tune A, has another way to do it. You can have a hard scattering here with two hard jets and a softer scattering here with two little jets. And so you'd get two big jets back to back, and you would have two little jets, and it would be four jets. Now, the real smoking gun would be is if it could really isolate and show that it's really this topology and that you can't get it without adding multiple proton interactions because ordinary QCD won't give it to you. That would be the smoking gun. Well, I'm not quite there yet, but let's look at some other properties of this thing. If this thing were two separate collisions, then there'd be a different energy dependence, different dependence on the ET of the leading jet. So what I'm going to show you is if I change the ET of the of the LeadJet. These are all back-to-back events, though. But I'm going from 30 to 70 to 95 to 130. You see the increase here, but there's very little change in what's happening in the associated density. So it doesn't seem that the jet number 3 and jet number 4, of course, I'm suppressing them too, so it's difficult to say, but there's not a lot of energy dependence there. If I wasn't doing this for back-to-back events, you would see an increase in this region, but here you don't. It looks almost independent of the jet number 1 and jet number 2, which is amusing. Okay, now this is the PT sum density is also independent of energy in that region. Okay, now let me show you this, and then I'll show you one forbidden plot. This is just for my own curiosity here. I thought, why don't I plot the associated density that we saw in min bias, which was the birth of jet number 1, with the associated density in the back-to-back events, which was the birth of jet number 3. And there they are, absolutely normalized. This event has a higher density everywhere. But boy, that region sure looks similar. And that's funny, maybe. But you know, if it was really multiple parton collisions, then it wouldn't be funny at all. Because what it'd be a superposition kind of a back-to-back two jets superimposed on this growth of this thing, which would be the third jet. So I don't know. That doesn't prove anything, but it's just an amusing comparison. In fact, there's the birth of the third jet, and there's the birth of the first jet. And it's just a multiplicative factor. If I multiply it, rising this by a multiplicative factor is like saying that the transverse region here has a higher proportion of hard scattering than did min bias. But if I just shift that up, looks pretty similar, which is pretty amazing. And you can do the same thing for PT sum, and then I'll show you what you should be asking me. You say, well, why don't I just look at the jet topologies? And I should. So there's the same thing for PT sum. Now, the question is, I guess I'm not going to look at this until I show you how the Monte Carlos agree, because what made me look at the jet topologies directly is by looking at how the Monte Carlos behave and seeing what was happening. So here's Pythia Tunae. This is in the region for the associated density, the birth of the third jet, without putting any restrictions on it. And here's Heerwig. And it's a low again in these regions. It's not producing enough stuff coming along with PT max T, and it doesn't have enough stuff on the away side. The away side is like would be the fourth jet, and this doesn't have it. And I'll come back to that in a minute. Here's the data minus the theory for these associated densities. And you see Heerwig is low again, just like it was a long time when we were just looking at the delta phi distributions and not the associated distributions a long time ago at the beginning of the talk. Now, but a funny thing happens. I pointed that out already. Funny thing happens that when you demand PT to be greater than 2, I run out of statistics, but you can still kind of see what's happening. Heerwig is now getting it to you here, but it's not getting it to you on the other side. So, and when I looked at that, I'll show you the data minus the theory. Both Tunae and Pythia now, when you demand a PT to be greater than 2 JeV, are roughly describing this, except maybe even a slightly stronger correlation in both of them. But the statistics is horrible. But you can still kind of see what's happening. But Pythia is getting it on the away side of this thing, on the other side of this thing, whereas Heerwig is not. Now, that thought made me think that, well, maybe Pythia has a better mixture of 3 jets versus 4 jets, has more 4 jets because of the multiple parton scattering, and therefore can do this, whereas Heerwig is being forced to try to do this with 3 jet events, because that's what you get mostly from QCD. And it doesn't have multiple parton scattering. So as soon as I was making this talk to you, like 3 days ago, I realized, well, why don't I just look at the jet topologies? And so here's the beginning of where this is going to end, and it's going to be the beginning of the next wish list, I'm sure. Here's a sneak preview. And then if any joy has to close his eyes. this is the number of jets for this. I'm just looking at the events that made up these plots. So you have to have greater than 30 for the leading one. It has to be back to back. You have to have PT greater than zero than 2 JeV in the transverse region. Just for the whatever was went into this plot is in the next plot. And so this is the multiplicity of jets. Now you have to go down very low ET. So this is the number of jets greater than 3 JeV. And you see the data has roughly equal amounts of 3 and 4 jets. But these are very soft jets. And it's not blessed. It's pre, which is forbidden. But I'm not. You won't find this on my website, so it'll be fine. And you'll forget it anyway. Now let's look at Pythia Tune A. Pythia Tune A has pretty darn good agreement. It has also roughly equal amounts of 3 and 4 jet events. It's a clump of energy with ET of 3 jets.
Two charged particles and some energy?
Well, this can have, yeah, it's not just charged particles, though, because these are down jets, so it can be neutrals as well. It's a few particles, yes, but they're clumped together because I just showed you the correlation.
Two charges and a neutral with one of them of energy above 1 GeV.
Well, enough to add up to 3 GeV, but yes, that's right. A few particles clumped together, though, because you saw from the phi distributions, you saw the size of the clumpiness from the phi distribution, so they do clump together in those phi distributions. So they clump together. Maybe you don't like to call these jets when they're that low of energy, but they're depositions of energy. They're depositions of energy.
You were talking about PT max particles with energy between one and 2 GeV.
Mm-hmm.
And those were in the minimum bias sample, but now the same things you're calling jets when you have this plot.
This plot comes, though, remember what data I'm using. That would not be the jet multiplicity if you just took typical jet events. Okay. That's the events that go into this plot. That's the events that have 30 JeV jet here, a back-to-back jet, and PT max in the transverse region greater than 2. It's the things that's making up this plot.
Oh, I'm sorry. So that plot is exactly what I just said.
It's jet topologies that are going into this plot.
Yes.
They're not at all typical jet topologies at all, because I just showed you that a way to satisfy this criterion was with 3 jets or 4 jets.
Yes.
But it looked like the 4 jets trying to satisfy it wouldn't populate the away side here. Okay? So now you can see exactly how the data did it. It had roughly equal mixtures of 3 jet topology and 4 jet topology, which I knew this is the way it would be once I looked at the plot, but I wanted to see it. And now Pythia Tune A was fitting the data. It fits this. Herwig was trying to fit the data, but it was doing it with way too much 3 jet and not enough 4 jet, which is exactly what I expected. But of course, this is the most interesting thing that I had to show you, and this is not blessed, so I have to get it off the screen.
It's lacking 5 jets, right?
Well, there are 5 jets there, too. They're little clumps of energy.
Herwig had the right 4 jets.
Oh, no, it didn't, because they're normalized. It didn't. It's the shape. I mean, you can't. Oh, I guess, okay, it had the right percentage of. It's not fair. It has way too much 2 jets, way too much 3 jets, you know.
Now, there's one more thing, which is that if you have an independent scattering, that should be uncorrelated and repeated.
That's what I'm looking at. I'm running the jobs right now. That's the wish. I told you the wish list was going to be made immediately when they see this, and I'm already running the jobs. Phi correlations too. And PT. It looks to me, I've already looked at the PT distribution of jet 1, jet 2, jet 3, and jet 4. This is really coming from 2 big jets back to back and softer jets, very much softer jets. So I thought too, you know, this whole idea of back to back correlations across here. You see, if it's multiple parton scattering and you have the 2 big jets here, and these jets that are coming across here are additional scattering, that's also a 2 jet, then you're going to see some correlations crossways across here in the transverse region. And so,
a few more minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick. I'm almost done. This is 2 more transparencies and I'll be done. And so you see there are correlations. When you plot the number of charged particles on side one versus the number on side two, you get a rise across ways for the back-to-back events in the same sample of events we've just been studying. And the same thing is sort of true for the KT on the other side. And if you look at this carefully, subliminally, but this will be on the website, this is the comparison of all these cross correlations across transverse 1 and transverse 2 when you have two big jets back-to-back and then you're looking crossways. And Pythia Tune A does much better than Heerwig here, too. For the same reason, maybe, because it has more four-jet component. But I guess I don't really need to summarize. I can just push this by until we finish. There's a summary here, but it doesn't say anything that I haven't said already. But it does say what's next. The next is exactly what the smoking gun to this whole deal would be, exactly what you already surmised, and I knew it as soon as I prepared this talk. That's why I started doing those runs. We have to look at the jet topologies and correlations and prove that there is an excess of four jets down in this. It's only in this down in this region that we've been studying, and show that Pythia can fit it, but you can't fit it with ordinary QCD without multiple parton scattering. So that's it. I guess I probably talked too long as usual, but I'm done.